Let's start with a little bit review of what we did yesterday. And we'll start on Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph on line 4. Boy mine Rav Dimi mi Rav Nachman. Ma'ol anuche kado de milcha gabi kado de kamka. De chamka. Is it permissible? That's what Rav Dimi was curious about. To take a container of salt and place it on the table next to kutach. Kutach is a combination of salt with bread and milk. Should we be afraid that there'll be some mixture here, perhaps some spilling of the kutach into the salt? And he won't pay any attention to this. He thinks the salt is parva, you know, to be used for meat. When in fact the salt has a blia of tam chalav. So when he uses the salt to put into his pot of meat, he is mixing milk and meat, and we know that that's not only just an isur bishul, but an isur achil if he eats it as well. So should we be afraid that from the kutach there will be spillage into the salt? Amalei, so Rav Nachman responds to Rav Dimi, and he says it's awesome. We have to worry about the possibility that the kutach will fall into the salt, and he doesn't know about it. Now I have a note here, which we didn't mention yesterday, and this note has many parts to it. We'll just mention one part to it now. And he says that in the poskim, it's clear that we're talking about two receptacles that are both open. They're both exposed. There's no lid, there's no covering. There's the salt and the kutach, and they're both open. If one of them, it doesn't matter which, is locked, is closed with a lid, then we're not afraid that there'll be a mixture between the two. So that's point number one in this note, and we have another point in just a minute. So that's why I say that for our salt shakers today, this is not really a problem. We have a cover over the salt shaker. Now, on the second round, Rav Dimi asks question number 2. Dechala mai. Now the word chala in Aramaic is in Hebrew is chometz, of vinegar. And now Rav Dimi wants to know, are you allowed to place a receptacle, an open receptacle of vinegar next to the open receptacle of kutach? Should we again be afraid, as you said before, that maybe some of the kutach is going to spill over into the vinegar, and then inadvertently, without even realizing it, he's going to take this vinegar and he's going to use it for a pot of meat? Amalei Shari, that's allowed. So Rav Dimi asks you, Maishna, why is it that in the case of salt you are machmir, in the case of vinegar you are mekil? Is there some distinction between the two cases? And the Gemara is going to give a distinction between the two cases. But before we get to that, I wanted to give you another part of this note here. And that is that after Rav Nachman gave Rav Dimi the first answer, and he was machmir, and he said you can't put the salt next to the kutach, Rav Dimi comes a second time around, and he wants to know if chometz, if vinegar, has the same status, the same halacha as salt. Now the very fact that he asked this question implies that he thought there was a distinction between the two. If he equated them in his mind, then he wouldn't have even asked the question as a separate question.
Well, at least he had a suspect that it was the different.
So the question now becomes the following. If Rav Dimi knew in his mind that there's room for distinction here, so then why is it that when Rav Nachman tells him that chometz is mutter, Rav Dimi asks him why are they different? I mean, he himself understood in his question, that was the premise of the question, that there is some distinction between the two. So for this we have a chidush, an insight here of the Lev Aryeh, one of the later Achronim, and he writes that Rav Dimi thought that chometz should actually be more chomer than melach. That melach is only lechatchila, which means you're not allowed to put it next to the kutach, but the evidence, if you did such a thing, everything's mutter. We don't have to assume that the kutach definitely fell into the salt. And we're going to rely on the fact that he just visually checks the salt, and he takes a look to see if any kutach, you know, got mixed up in the salt. And if he comes to the conclusion that there was no mixture, he's allowed to go ahead and use the salt for fleshes. But in the case of chometz, where the kutach is not nikar bo, because there's a mixture here of two liquids, so Rav Dimi, the questioner, thought that maybe even b'dieved, since there's a serious likelihood or some percentage of a statistic that the kutach fell into the chometz, into the vinegar, so then since he can't see, it's not easily discernible as to whether or not the kutach actually fell into the chometz, he thought maybe even b'dieved it should be also. And this was the intention of his question. He wanted to know, what's the din of chometz? For sure that in chometz, we should be machmir, if we're machmir in the case of melach, but should we be machmir even one step further and say that it's also even b'dieved? And here's where he was shocked, very surprised by Rav Nachman's answer, who told him that chometz is mutter, even l'chatchila. And that's when Rav Dimi asked him, what's the difference between chometz and melach? So we have three possible gradations here. We have one extreme case, which is the understanding of Rav Dimi of chometz, which he thought would even be the evidence would be also. We have the possible kula in the case of chometz, according to Rav Nachman's answer that chometz is not even a problem l'chatchila, and in the middle you have the case of melach, which is l'chatchila is asur, but b'dieved is mutter. So we have all the different categories. So this is a big chiddush here, that Rav Dimi himself knew that chometz should be asur in his mind, but it should be asur with a kal v'chomer, and even worse and more chomer than melach. So to his surprise, the answer of Rav Nachman was shari, it's mutter. U'mayishna. And now he has to really get a clarity here. Why should we be mekil in the case of chometz? And Rav Nachman sort of pushes him off with a joke, so to speak, and he says, "L'chitechu ala kura demilcha." You know, you should measure out a kur, which is a massive volume of salt, and try to eat that massive amount of salt. And this is his way of saying that, you know, I'm going to give you an answer, but hold your horses, so to speak. My time. So what is the distinction between the two? Why would we be more makil in the case of chometz? And the Gemara answers, Hai isei isura be'ene, ve'hai lesser isura be'ene. We're better off in the case of chometz. Why? The problem with melach is that isa isura be'ene. The iser of the kutach, if it falls into the salt, is be'en, which means that the thickness of the kutach can be seen in the melach. And that's called nikar. That's the key word here, is nikar. Because we have a concept of bittul, and you might say that if there's a sizable volume of salt here, the little bit of a splash of kutach into the salt is batel b'shishim, but the problem is that the precondition for bittul is when it's eino nikar, when you can't see the iser and discern it from the head. But in a case where it's nikar, then there's no bittul. So the description of this tarobas as being nikar, in this case that the kutach, because it is thick, is Nikar is going to be a barrier and an impediment to prevent the application of Bittul.
Wait a minute, I would say the following. I can see the Kutach, okay, I take that part out with some extra salt and shrink it and all. In the meantime, the Tom maybe has spread through the rest of the salt, but the Tom is not Nikar and can be Mevutam.
Right. So let me just read to you the footnote here. He says the following. That Melach im yipol bo min akutach hasamuch lo, if the kutach falls into the melach, yeshno le'isur bi'eno. Vivneshu av, av is ayin bet, v'nikar b'melach v'eno mizbatel. In the note here, he says that there's something called cholav tzolul, which is more thin, it's not thick and coarse like the case of kutach. And there he says, you'd be allowed to put the salt next to this regular milk, as our milk, for example, because even if, in the worst case scenario, the milk spills into the melach, it's eino nikar. In other words, it's absolutely absorbed by the melach, and therefore we could apply the principle of bittul. But in the case of kutach, it's not completely absorbed by the melach, because kutach is a very thick substance, and therefore it's considered hafkas taromis. It's not a taromis.
What about my question?
Bittul. Bittul can only apply when you have a taromis. But if you have two things that remain separate, of course they're together and mixed, but they're separate essentially, then there's no taromis, and if there's no taromis, there's no bittul.
So what about my question? You just take the kutach out on Shalom Yisrael.
I don't know if you can, you know, the kutach is mixed together with the salt. I'm not sure if you can do that. But the main thing is he doesn't even pay attention. He doesn't even realize that he's not aware of the fact that there was a spill.
I see.
Now let's take the case of chometz. And there the Gemara says, Lesa Isura Biene, which means that the kutach, although it's thick, nevertheless it will be completely absorbed by the chometz, by the vinegar. And therefore it's completely absorbed, it's eino nikar. If it's eino nikar, you know, you would say, well, intuitively that makes things worse, but no, the contrary, it makes things better. Because if it's eino nikar, it's a total taroves, and then it'll be bottle legamri. So that even in the worst case scenario, if kutach, unbeknown to him, fell into chometz, it'll be batel in the chometz. And therefore, since we don't know that it's going to fall into the chometz, we therefore allowing you to put the kutach next to the chometz, because even in the worst case scenario, which we don't believe is going to happen, but it might happen, it will be batel. And that's because it's not nikar. And that's the chiddush here, that something that's not nikar, it's a little bit counterintuitive, is going to be batel.
This Gemara is the source for that rule?
I don't know.
Okay.
I assume that you could find this all over the place. I think you could find it in Nazir, even in Masechet Nazir, you'll see about Nikar B'Mkomo.
Okay.
So now we're ready for the new Gemara for today. And we're going to count down from the top, approximately 10 lines down. We're going to look for Hahu Bar Gozla. And the word gozlo, which in Hebrew is gozel, is a piece of meat. So we have a piece of meat. Dinofal lekada de kamka. It fell into this receptacle of kutach. Now the meat is cold. If the meat is hot, then obviously we have a serious problem of basa v'cholov. But if the meat is cold, and let's assume it wasn't cooked, it's raw meat for the time being. We'll see about cooked meat in just a minute. So the question is, do we have to assume that the meat was bolea, the cholav of the kutach? And the reason for this is that even though tzonen, in a cold situation, we usually say there's no blia, but the exception to that rule is maluach. And we had a long discussion a few days ago about maluach, that maluach, when something is salted, is harei kiroseach. It's like it's, according to Hilchos Bliya, it's like it's hot. Now this kutach has a pretty serious amount or volume of salt in it. And that could perhaps change the element of tzonein into roseach.
Are we always talking about whether the meat is permitted? Or isn't there also the question of the kutach itself?
Right. In other words, that kutach that fell into the meat or vice versa, whatever fell into what, that's for sure going to be a problem unless we can assume that in the case of tzonein, it's mutter. So the Gemara says sharia. The Gemara says that in this particular case, Rav Chinina Berei de Rava mi Pashronia was matirit. And Rava heard about this. Amar Rava man chakim, who is this great wise man, sage, Lemishre, who had the goal to be matir ki hai gavn in such a case. Ilav, it couldn't be anyone other than Rav Chinina Berei de Rava mi Pashronia. He is a great scholar, and only someone of his caliber could take it upon himself to be matir such a thing. And why was he matir? Kasavar, because he held that ki amar Shmuel maliach harei kiroseach, that this principle that maliach is considered as if it was hot and therefore generates bliyah, hani mili, that only applies hechadi eino nechal machmas molcho, only if it's so heavily salted that you couldn't possibly eat it. Like, for example, you take a piece of meat in order to get rid of its dam and you salt it, there's a volume of dam such that you couldn't eat the meat, it's so absorbed with dam, with melach. And therefore, we say maliach harei kiroseach. However, aval hai kutcha, but this case of kutach, harei necha machmas milcha, despite the fact that it has a mixture of salt, we still eat it. So it means that it's not overly salted, and in such a case, even Shmuel would agree that we don't apply the principle of maliach harei kiroseach. And here I have a number of points that I wanted to add. First of all, Tosfos, Dibur Maskil Mahu, says the following, that even though the Gemara comes to the conclusion that you're not allowed to put salt next to kutach, and it even had a suffix back and forth about the status of chometz next to kutach, nevertheless, you're allowed to put a kad shel cholov alongside a kad shel basar. You can have an open milk container next to an open piece of meat on the same table, and it's mutter. Why? Because in the case of milk and meat, people are careful, and they'll make sure that there's no mixture between the two. And in contrast, in the case of melach or chometz, people are not sensitive and they're not careful about a mixture of milk into the salt or milk into the vinegar, because milk into salt or vinegar doesn't generate any eser, but if there's a milk into meat, that's generating eser. Therefore, in the case of cholov with melach and chometz, if you have them both contiguous, he says people aren't paying attention that this melach might become, or this chometz might become also because of the mixture of kutach. However, the Meir is of the opinion that although we're not prohibited from putting two foods next to each other, only in the case of kutach and melach, those are the only two, and that's because he says that in these two cases of kutach and melach, people are regilim lemashmesh tamid. In other words, they're always using the salt and they're always using the kutach. Kutach is a very popular dip on the table. He says, Melach tashmisho matsui b'kol shah. Every moment of the day we use salt. Kutach, hayirigilim litbel boes hamacholim, they would use it as a dip. Ubi elu, in these cases of salt and kutach, Hamichshol Matzul Yoser. It's very probable that he might have a mixture of the two. And basically, both Tosus and the Meiri are coming to the same conclusion that when the Gemara prohibits putting one thing next to the other, don't extrapolate from that beyond the case in the Gemara, which is Melach and Kutach. And Tosus says, because if it's Basar and Cholah, for example, people are very careful about that to make sure there's no mixture, or the way the Meiri says that Kutach and Melach are such commonly used dips and so forth, that therefore there's more of a chashash. Okay. Now we have Tosus Divra Maskal Hani, which is the next to last Tosus on the page. Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael. We had a Gadol by that name who just passed away in the last, I think, probably about 10 years ago. His name is Rav Fisher. I don't know if you ever heard. Yaakov Yisrael Fisher. It's very rare that you find in the Gemara or in the Rishonim a double name. You know, we used to double names. Like, my name is Azariah Elchanan. You know, two names. But back in the time, that was kind of rare. You know, one name was enough in those days. Today, even two names is not enough. I'll be smarter tomorrow when I know the name of my grandson. We'll see how many names they give him. In any event, so this Rav Yaakov Yisrael says the following, that in the case of Kutach, where there's a mixture of salt, that case is not similar to Melicha, where you salt meat. He says, Afila Melicha Kazu Einan Echsheves, Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho. He says, even when you salt a piece of meat, it's not necessarily so that it fits this description of Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho. Ela im Molach Harbe, unless he puts an excessive amount of salt, Ke'ein Melicha Shel Ibut. What they used to do is they would skin the hides of an animal, and in the process of tanning it, they would literally soak it in salt. Now, in the case of Melicha Shemolchim Es HaBasar, he says it depends. If the Melicha is within normal range, let's say he's trying to get out the dam, that's not Eino Necha Machmas Molcho. But if, let's say, for example, they didn't have refrigeration in those days, so what they did was they immersed the meat into salt, Kedei L'Shomro, to give it long life. Well, for example, if they were going on the derech, they would preserve the meat in salt. He says that's already considered Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho, that it's not edible because of the volume of salt. That's the case where the Gemara says it is asur. Right, so let's go over the Gemara one more time in the light of Rabbeinu Yaakov of Yisrael's comment. The heter here is that Shmuel's Roseach, in the case of Moliach, is only if it's Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho. So we assume that when you salt a piece of meat to get the dam out, that would certainly come under the Iser of Moliach HaReik Roseach. According to Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael, it may or may not. It really depends upon the volume of salt. But you can't say ipso facto that there's such a volume of salt that he can't eat the meat. It's unedible. But if you are on the road and you have to guarantee that there's that there's preservation to the meat, so you absolutely salt it, you know, and soak it in salt, he says that's going to be a case of Eino Necha Machmas Molcho, and then we're going to apply the principle of Moliach Peroseach, and if there's any mixture of Kutach in an Eino Necha Machmas Molcho situation, it's going to be Asur. Now it seems that the Rosh agrees with Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael. And one of the super commentaries on the Rosh makes the following comment. He says that Tosfos also agrees with Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael. He doesn't just quote Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael. And therefore, even after you salt meat, you wonder what would be if you rinse off the salt from the meat, is it still considered roseach? Because the tam of the melicha of the salt is inside the meat itself. You've actually cleaned off the surface level of melach, but what about the tam of melach that was absorbed into the meat? So according to this particular commentary, if there was a significant volume of salt, then even after you remove the salt by rinsing off the meat, you still have, the meat still retains its status of maliach harehu k'roseth, such that if kutach would fall on top of it, it's osur. But then Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam holds that any case in which you salt meat in order to cook the meat, meaning you get rid of the dam, it by definition falls under Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho. Because he says you can't eat this meat while the melech is olav. And therefore he says you rinse off the meat, and Rabbeinu Tam accepts the position which we rejected earlier, that once you salt off the meat, you don't have to worry about any salt that's balua, the taste of the salt that's inside, it has been absorbed into the meat, but it's already nechal machmas malcho, and if kutach would fall on the meat after you rinsed off the meat, rinse off the salt from the meat, then it would be mutter. So in other words, according to Rabbeinu Tam, moliach harehu k'roseth applies as long as the salt is on the meat before it was rinsed off. So Rabbeinu Tam is a machmir, but he's also mekil, if you remember. He's a machmir in the sense that he holds that salted meat is eino nechal machmas molcho, and he has no exception to that rule. On the other hand, he's mekil, and he says that once you rinse off that salt, then it's no longer categorized as eino nechal machmas molcho. So we have a double machlokas here between Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael on the one hand and Rabbeinu Tam on the other hand. One machlokas is going to be where the salted meat, which the purpose of which is to remove the dam, is considered eino nechal machmas molcho, and according to Rabbeinu Yaakov Yisrael, only in a case where he uses a vast volume, a serious volume of salt, then it becomes Eino Nechal, whereas Rabbeinu Tam assumes that any case where you salt the meat is already considered Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho. Then we have another Machlokes, in a case of Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho, where you salted the meat, what happens after you rinse off the salt? Does it lose its status as Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho, or are we still worried about the taste of the salt that was absorbed into the meat? Now he quotes the Ritva. The Ritva says,
we're still in Tosfot?
I wouldn't say we're in Tosfot.
Oh, you were in the
Mesifta. I'm actually in the Mesifta. I'm just okay, giving you some of the background here. The Ritva says that the Gemara should have said Eino Nechal Im Molcho, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Meaning, if Rabbeinu Tam limits the case of Moliach HaRei Kuseh when the salt is actually on the meat, then it should have said Eino Nechal Im Molcho. You cannot eat it with its salt. The salt is such a serious volume and it gives such a profound taste that you can't eat the meat at this point. But what is Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho? Which literally means as a result of the salting. Says the Ritva, that proves that even after you rinse off the salt, it still remains Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho, which means that if Kuta falls on it, it's also. And the reason for that is because Yishar Bo Tam Maluach, there's still a vestige of a Tam Maluach, even after you rinse off the thing, and that's called Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho. That's why the Gemara deliberately used the term Machmas instead of Im Molcho. Now, how do we paskin la locha? I don't have the Shulchan Aruch here, but he quotes the Ran. The Ran says la locha, gam malicha l'kder nechsheves einu nechal machmas molcho, but dafka kol zman shem amaliach olav. So the Ran accepts sort of a middle of the road shita, compromise shita, and he says the following, that we have to consider our salted meat as einu nechal machmas molcho, and therefore maliach harehu k'roseth, but only as long as the melech is still on top of the basar. He gives again another case of Eino Nechal Machmas Molcho, and that's where he preserves the meat by salting it, because he's out on the road. And he says that when you salt something because you want to preserve the meat as you know, as a substitute for what we call today refrigeration, then he says it's so profound that even after you rinse off the salt, it still remains. So whereas the Ran is willing to be mekil and accept Rabbeinu Tam that once you rinse off the salt, it's no longer asur, that's only in a case where you salted meat in order to cook the meat immediately. But if you salted the meat because you want to preserve the meat, because you're on a, you know, you're on a trip all the way out to to the west or something, you know, you have your caravan and you want to keep your meat inside. Today they have those red things. What do they call those? It's almost like a refrigeration. You know what I mean? Those big boxes,
coolers.
The coolers, right? So if instead of a cooler, you're absolutely salting the meat, you know, with a vast, vast volume of salt, he says then even after you rinse off the salt, so much salt has been absorbed in the meat that it's still considered maliach hareyu kiroseh. Now all that we've discussed until now about kutach falling on meat is a case of raw meat. We haven't yet discussed a case of cooked meat or roasted meat. And that's what the Gemara is going to address right now. Vahani mili, says the Gemara, is chai only in a case where the meat was not cooked. Aval tzli, if the meat was already roasted, and we'll see about cooking, is boy klipa. Then, if the kutach falls on the meat, then we assume that the meat has a certain amount of cracks in it. You know, it's been softened up by the process of bishul of tzli, and now the kutach starts seeping into the meat itself, even though the meat is cold. And for this, you have to remove klipa. You have to take a surface level of meat and strip it off the top, all over the meat, on all sides, saviv saviv, because there's some minimum blia of chalav on the outskirts, on the outside of the meat. And then the Gemara says, v'yispe pile kule asur. And if you actually see cracks in the meat, so it's not just that the meat was cooked or roasted, and if you assume it has a certain absorbability, if there's such a word, but that you see with your eyes that there are what's called in Hebrew bikayim, which means there are breaks in and indentations, crevices in the meat, that's called pile. Then kuli also, then we have to assume that the kutach penetrates throughout the entire piece of meat, and there's no way you can skin off the top layer of the meat. And so too, ve'i mitavel betavlin kule asur. Also, if you have a piece of meat that's been heavily spiced with tavlin, that also softens off the meat. It creates bekoim. It's kind of like, if you remember klicheres, you know, we spoke about pottery that it's full of holes in it, and therefore the kutach is going to penetrate into these holes and completely be absorbed completely in the entire piece of meat. Now here I want to share with you a number of points. The Gemara mentions tzli, and here we have a gigantic machlokus rishon. On the one hand, the case of chai, which was the first case that we said was mutter, unless it was salted. So you have kutach falling on raw meat, and we said that that's mutter, as opposed to tzli, which we said requires klipa. So the Sefer Truma, we mentioned him yesterday, says that the word chai means that it was not cooked or roasted, it is raw. Tzli means that it's been roasted, and even though now it's cold, nevertheless it will absorb at least the surface layer of the kutach. The Ramban, on the other hand, says the distinction is not between raw and cooked, or raw and roasted, but between cold and hot. And he claims that the Gemara very often uses the word chai as a substitute for the word sonen, for the word cold. And the Gemara also uses the word tzli as a substitute for the word roseach. So when you say something is roasted, what you really mean, it's hot. It's sizzling hot. And therefore, according to the Ramban, what would be the status of meat when milchiks fell on the meat, like the kutach case here? It all depends. Is the meat hot or it's cold? If it's cold meat, then it's mutter. If it's hot meat, then it's osur. How osur is it? So it depends. If it's just regular tzli, then it's klipa's worth that's osur. If it's pili, if it's already gotten to the point where it was roasted for a long enough time that there are now crevices and cracks in the meat, or alternatively, if the meat was spiced, in those cases, the kutach penetrates through these crevices and is absorbed throughout the entire piece of meat. Omer Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, kikar shechotach olea basar. Now, when I read this Gemara, I thought what it meant was that he had a piece of bread, he puts meat on top of the bread, he lays it down, he starts cutting the meat. And I thought the problem here was that the taste of the meat is going to be absorbed in the bread, and therefore the bread becomes fleishiks osur li'ochlo, which means that you're not allowed to eat the bread with milchiks. That's what I thought. But Rashi tells me otherwise. And the Rush suggests that Rashi is right. He supports Rashi. And the issue here is not meat and milk, but blood and milk. Not meat and bread, meaning making your bread into a meaty piece of bread, but rather dam and bread. Why? Because what's happening is he has a piece of meat which has a certain volume of dam that was absorbed in the meat. And if he cuts the meat, then the assumption is that this liquid dam drips down into the bread that's below it, and the bread is bolea the dam.
And according to Rashi, it's roasted meat. It's not raw meat.
Correct. Let's assume it's roasted meat, but it still has dam in it. There's still some element of dam. He hasn't removed all the dam. Now, you might ask me, why are we discussing the piece of bread? Why not discuss the piece of meat? I mean, if the meat still has dam in it, so that itself should be also. So the Rush answers that afal pisha no serbo dam, even though this piece of meat still has dam within it, that dam is not asur. Why? Because it's called dam evarim shelo piresh min habasar chutza. In other words, all the dam that goes out of the piece of meat, that's called dam apuresh, that's considered dam according to Torah law. The dam that was not porish, meaning it's still absorbed inside the meat, that doesn't have, at least on a deraisa level for sure, doesn't have the status of dam. I mean, for this we'd have to learn the sugi of dam, which is also mesecta chulin, but not in this chapter. Now, once he cuts this piece of meat and some of this dam that was that surplus or residue of dam that was absorbed in the meat now falls onto the bread, that already becomes a serious problem because that's dam haporish min habasar. And dam haporish min habasar is an isur Torah. And therefore, get rid of this piece of bread. But Vahani Mili, the Gemara qualifies this the asmik. In other words, the meat itself is red meat. Now, what difference does it make whether the meat is red or it's dark or it's brown in color? So Rashi explains that the adimus, the redness of the meat, indicates that there's dam inside the meat. And this dam was there during the lifetime of the animal, and later on, we have to remove that dam. So we have a problem with the meat because we have the problem with the bread because the bread is absorbing the dam from the meat. But that only applies the avre. And that means when the dam covers over the kikar from one side to the other on both sides of the bread. Now, what difference it make whether it covers both sides of the bread or only one side of the bread? So in the note here, he quotes a Tosus HaRosh, and the Tosus HaRosh asks that question, Madua Why im lo avra dam mitzad l'tzad? If the dam did not go from one side of the bread to the other, ein bo isur. Why is that so? Hello, im dam royli osro. If you're telling me that the dam is osur because it was porridge from the basar, is then who cares whether it went from one side to the other? So the Tosa Rosh quotes the Ravid. The Ravid says that this statement of Shmuel is totally based on what we call Maris Ayin. What does that mean? He says this liquid dam, or redness, red liquid that drips out of the meat, if it's such a significant volume of dam that it covers the kikar from one side to the other, then we have a problem of maris ayin. Then people think that he's eating dam, that he's eating a piece of bread that is absorbed with dam. Now, we're missing one piece of the puzzle. Who cares about maris ayin? Let's leave out maris ayin. Maris ayin is at best a derabanan, but why don't we worry about the dam itself? So let's go back to the previous note and read it again. And he says the following: Habasar atzmo eino asur. The meat itself that he's cutting, and it's red meat and it has this liquid that looks like dam in it, is not asur. Why? Bishum shehu dam ha'evarim shelo pirish min habasar hachutza. So again, I don't know enough about dam to really evaluate this, because as I said, dam is a sugya in Masechta Chulin elsewhere. But I'm going to take a shot at it. I'm going to assume that, at least according to the Ravid sheet, I'm not sure if everyone would buy into this, we're not dealing with an isur dam da oraisa. And why is that? Because it's not dam ha-poresh min ha-basar, even though, again, the dam is now being, you know, so to speak, extracted or removed from the basar, since he's cutting the basar. But nevertheless, that's not what the Torah had in mind when it said that dam is also because it's poresh min ha-basar. Poresh min ha-basar means that in a natural sense, the dam somehow, let's say while the animal's alive or while you shech the animal, the dam is porish. But now you have a piece of meat and you've removed the dam from the meat. What's left is some sort of residue of dam. That's not considered dam, it's porish min abosar. As I said before, I'm only trying to do the best I can. We would really have to learn the sugi of dam. And therefore, says the Rabbi, the whole issue here with this loaf of bread is maris ayin. Because although the dam was removed after you put the meat on top of the basar and you slice the meat, but to the eye, to the naked eye of the spectator, he doesn't know where this dam is coming from. He doesn't know the history of the dam. And therefore he's going to come to the conclusion that this is real dam and it's awesome in a Torah, and he's eating a piece of bread a loaf of bread that's absolutely saturated with dam. And therefore, says the Ravid, Hani Mili Diavre, the only time that there's an issue of Maris Ayin is when there's such a substantial absorption of dam into the Kikar Lechem that it goes from one side to the other. Then he says the following, Vahani Mili Diasmeche, Aval Klishta Lesleba. He says the following, that this whole Iser in the bread only applies when it is samich v'aveh. In other words, the dam that's coming out has a certain solidity to it. It's, to some extent, it's coarse, it's thick. But if it's klishta, if it's absolutely liquid, and it's pourable like water, leslenba, then it doesn't even look like dam. It has a different appearance. Right, so dam, if you look at dam, like Chas Shalom, let's say you cut your finger a little bit, so you'll see it's very thick. But if you take a look at meat, and there's a certain red liquid in the meat, even today, you know, those who like
raw
meat. Rare meat. You'll see that there's a lot of blood over there. So I want well done because I don't want to eat this blood. I don't want to eat blood. But the answer is that's not blood. That's something called mohel. Mohel means it's a dover soul. It's something that's clear. It's something that's liquidy. And that doesn't even look like dam. So again, using the Raivin, and again, I don't know how to learn this Gemara without the Raivin. The whole business here of dam in the bread is only the Rabbanon, because it's not dam ha-porish menachai. And the Rabbanon asked it because of Maris Ayin, because it looks like dam. But when does it look like dam? So we have these conditions that the Gemara establishes here. And that is that the meat itself is red, so that the dam coming out of it looks like dam. Number two, there's such a volume of dam that it saturates the bread from side to side, from top to bottom. And number three, it's got to be a kind of a blood that looks a little bit like blood. It still has this description of being samach v'aver, but it's not klishta, it's not salul. So if it's salul, if it's absolutely a liquidy, then it doesn't even look like dam. Shmuel Shadilei LeKalba. The Gemara tells a story now about Shmuel. And he had this piece of bread, and he had cut a piece of meat on top of the bread, and the meat itself now should be asur, because we said Marasai.
The bread, you mean?
I'm sorry, the bread itself should be asur. And he took the bread and he fed it to his dog. Apparently dogs like red bread. So in other words, although there's an Iser Maris Ayin, that Iser Maris Ayin only applies if he himself, a human being, would eat the bread. But it's not also by Noah. And therefore he can feed it to his dog. So the footnote here talks about raising dogs. He says, are you allowed to raise a dog? You know, it's sort of like a little bit of a chiddush to us that Shmuel owned a dog. So for those people who own dogs, they can quote this Gemara, Shmuel owned a dog. So Yamshel Shlomo says that mutar li adam legadel kelev, but only on the condition that it's a kelev she'eino mazik. It's not a dangerous or destructive kelev.
So he had a poodle.
Yeah, a poodle, yeah, very good. Yeah, he had a chihuahua, we used to say, right?
Among Arab Jews, there's definitely a fear of dogs. We family friend.
And I'm afraid of dogs.
We get a dog because they would refuse to come to visit if they were...
I was walking down the street here, I'm telling you, I thought I was going to die. And at the last second, the woman who was holding on to this dog pressed an electric shock. And I saw a red light go on in the collar around the dog, and the dog froze in its spot. Could you imagine? The way I interpret the story, and I almost had a heart attack, is that if she wouldn't have pressed that button at the very last second, I wouldn't be here to give the shiur. Now, in the footnote, he quotes Rav Meir Simcha, the Or Sameach. He says, why did Shmuel feel that he wanted to feed the dog? Why didn't he just sell it on the open market to a guy? So again, you can give a thousand answers, but Rav Meir Simcha has his answer. He says the following, that once the Rabbanon asked something, b'toras maris ayin, you're not allowed to do schora with it. You're not allowed to sell it. But you're allowed to feed it to your dog. That's not a sale. In other words, the Rabbanon didn't want you to go into business selling food that you can't eat, that's not kosher, that's not permissible. So you can't, for example, if I want to go into the swine business and sell bacon on the open market, I'm not allowed to do that. But I can take the bacon and I can feed it to my dog.
That's a certain Rabbanon. In other words, if you're trying to sell cheeseburgers, that would be deraita, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I meant to say just treif. I wasn't talking about pasul chol.
Like treif meat, in other words, when you shech then, and there are the parts you can't eat, the parts that when it's treif, you can't sell it to a non-Jew.
Right, only pasul chol is also by no. But he's saying to go into business and make a business out of it with a profit, so that we don't do b'dvarim shel isur.
Oh,
And the Or Sameach is extending this even to something that's only, again, if I'm working with the Raivin, it's only also because of Maris Ayin, but nevertheless, you don't want to go into business.
No, Eric's question was kosher slaughterhouses. There's meat that they can't make kosher and they sell that off. That would be against the Or Sameach?
Well, I don't know, again, the parameters of this Isur Schora. Okay. It could be that...
Maybe there's an Omar sign because you can't tell what they're selling. You know, it's meat is meat as opposed to selling the bread that's soaked
in blood.
Now
let's see the whole Rav Meir Simcha, because maybe he'll relate to some of your questions. He says the Omnam, however, im his dame dvar iser etzel Yisrael. In other words, he wasn't going to business on a regular basis. Then technically mutolo lemochro legoy, he's allowed to sell it to a guy. And maybe your case in the Schlett house is that it's his dame lo. You know, this is not a I'm not opening up a business of selling chelev, you know, on the open market. In a case where you yourself created the isur, that's not considered his daming law. In other words, he cut the meat on top of the basar, and he created an isur dam in the basar. Again, call it marasayim, but it's an isur dam. That's not a case of his daming law. His daming law is an inadvertent result of an action, but it wasn't that he created the isur. So you could do business with Iser that you are stuck with, so to speak, his damin lo, but not if you created the Iser. So here, again, this is all Rabbi Simcha's Chiddush, that since Shmuel had cut the meat on top of the lechem, the kikar, he really, in effect, created an Iser dam, in quotation marks, on the lechem.
Why would he, if he doesn't eat it, if he considers it usher, why would he be cutting the meat on top of the bread to begin with?
He probably made a mistake. I'm assuming he did it inadvertently. He didn't realize that there was bread underneath it, you know. Let's say there was a, you know, some sort of a reshet in between. I don't know. But it turns out that this is not called his damin lo, according to Rav Meir Simcha, and therefore he fed it to his dog. He would not have sold it on the open market to a guy. So Rav Huna Yoev Le Lishame. Rav Huna would give the piece of bread in such a situation. Now again, I think, Eric, your question still bothers me. It sounds like the Gemara is talking about something that's very common. I don't know. Because Shmuel did it, and now Rav Huna did it. I don't know. Why are they cutting meat on top of bread? I know the whole thing. You know what? Maybe they used to eat sandwiches, you know, with meat and bread. So let's say, for example, if he took this out of the oven, right? Let's say he roasted a piece of meat, and then he wants to cut the meat to fit into a sandwich. You know, he's got his...
That's how we're talking about raw meat.
What do you say?
That we're talking about raw meat.
No, I don't think we're talking about raw meat. Again, you know, if it's raw meat, you might have an isur dam da oraisa, because that might be dam haporesh min habasa. But we're talking about something that was already roasted, and if it was already roasted, most of the dam is out. What you're left with is that substance that may look like dam. So I'm just suggesting, because I see that the Gemara is telling so many stories about somebody who cuts this basar over a piece of bread, that maybe that was common practice. And what did Rav Huna do in this case? He took the bread and he gave it to his shamash, to his servant. So Gemara asked me, Marav Shach, I don't get it. Ishari, if in this case the lechem was permissible for whatever reason, like all the restrictions that we mentioned before, is the Kuli Almashari, he could have eaten it himself. V'i also, and if on the other hand the lechem is also, l'kuliyama also, how can he give it to his shamash? So the Gemara answers, Shani Rav Huna da'anina daite. Rav Huna was different. Why? He was an istinus. Have you ever heard of the word istinus? I think it's a Greek word. I'm not sure how to translate it to English, but he's super, super sensitive. You know, you have these people like the princes of the pea, you know, they can't tolerate smells. You know what I'm talking about? So that's an istinus. And to him, once this lechem was absorbed with dam, even though, let's say, it wasn't such an extensive amount of dam, for him, it was a davar shel miyus. It was something repulsive. And therefore, although there's no iser in the bread, nevertheless, he couldn't eat it. So he gave it to his shamash. Now the Gemara is telling us this story according to the Achronim here, in order to demonstrate that Rav Huna felt that the meat was, that the bread was mutar, right? L'daito, according to the opinion of Rav Huna, ein iser b'achilas pas zu. You know, his problem was he would have eaten it himself. He gave it to his Heusbacher, his second in command. He had an istinus situation. It was most for him, but the bread itself was mutter. And Rava achille, Rava himself, he wasn't so istinus. He would eat this bread that was cut, you know, where the bread, the meat was cut on top of the bread. The karile chamar basar, and he would assume that any blood that came out of this meat when he cut the meat after it was already roasted is yayin basar. Chamar means yayin, and basar means meat. What does it mean? The wine of meat. It means that this is a mohel. Mohel means a certain red substance, a liquid substance, but it's not that. So he didn't even accept the whole principle of Shmuel that there's some sort of Maris Ayin situation where we have to consider it as Dam. And, okay, we'll have to stop soon, but I just want to add that the Rashba here says that Rav was Matir only in a situation where he roasted the meat to the point in which most people would eat the meat. Shmuel, on the other hand, asered it, this mohel that we spoke about before, this something that's red, that liquidy that looks like dam, and that was only Mishum Marasayim, and Rava wasn't afraid of Marasayim because he felt that people will see that he roasted the meat and the dam is not dam, and they'll realize the difference between the two.
And that's only when it's a really liquidy, I mean, only when it's the thicker, the viscous liquid.
Right, and even Shmuel is only when there was some thickness to that liquid. And even in that case, Rav is not worried about Marasai. However, in Lo Nitzla, let's say it wasn't roasted, Af Rava Moda Shakikar Osu. So this whole sugya here, which this is what we assumed, we suspected, but now I see it explicitly, is talking about roasted meat. Which again makes sense that they would cut the meat over the bread. Rava, according to the Ran, went even a step further. He says, even if he did a minimum amount of roasting on the meat, and it's now only Kemaychel Ben Josai, which is like a third of Bishul, maybe half of Bishul, but it's not really cooked, nevertheless, the Dam is already considered Moel, it's a different substance, and there's no Marasayin, and the Kikar is Mutter. And Rava himself would eat that Kikar. So again, there are two Shitas here. In the Rishonim, it's Machlokes in the Ran and the Rashba about something that was partially cooked. Would Rava be matir it with the Dam? Okay, then Rabbi Osei. So again, I have to notify you about Sunday because I'll be up in Carmiel. But I wish everyone a great.